This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
On the morning of April 2nd, 1865, Jefferson Davis, president of the Confederacy, received a telegram from General Robert E. Lee. "There is no more time. The Yankees are coming," it warned. So shortly before midnight, Davis boarded a train from Richmond and fled the capital, setting off on an intense and thrilling chase in which Union cavalry hunted the Confederate president. Just 2 weeks later, President Lincoln was assassinated, and the nation was convinced that Davis was somehow involved. The saga that began with Manhunt continues now with the suspenseful and electrifying Bloody Crimes. Author James Swanson joins me live on the program. James, it's a terrific honor to have you with us.
Oh, thanks, Coy. I appreciate it.
So the what was left, this is part of the story now from Manhunt that you are continuing. It's almost what happened next. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Because in Manhunt, I told the amazing story of John Wilkes Booth killing Abraham Lincoln and then going on an incredible 12-day chase while he was hunted down. But then after I finished Manhunt, I realized that was one-third of a series of a great trilogy of stories that happened at the end of the Civil War. One, of course, was Booth on the run attempting to escape and save his life. The other two were the final journeys of Abraham Lincoln after he was dead and his final journey home to martyrdom and great American heroism. And then, of course, Jefferson Davis was on the run, not really to save his life. He was on the run to save his country, to save the Confederacy, to prolong the war. And so at the end of the war, both Lincoln and Davis went on these final journeys that made them greater heroes to their cause after their fall from power than they had ever been during their presidencies.
We're talking with author James Swanson. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Let's start with Jefferson Davis. I was struck in the book by how much the man just wouldn't give up, and he's really trying to rally the South even when all is lost.
Yes, well, the first piece of bad news was when he got that telegram from Lee on April 2nd. Davis is sitting in church on Sunday morning at St. Paul's Church in Richmond, and he gets that notice that the Army of Northern Virginia cannot hold Petersburg anymore. It's going to have to withdraw or be destroyed. And that means the road to Richmond is going to be open that very night to the Union Army. So Davis thinks, well, Richmond may fall, but that's only the capital city. I'll withdraw to Danville, Virginia, 140 miles away, and establish a new capital. But then, 7 days later, he gets the bad news that Lee has surrendered. So now he's got to flee Danville. He thinks, I'll go into North Carolina. I have Joe Johnston's army there. And then, without his knowledge or permission, Joe Johnston surrenders the Confederate Army in North Carolina. And Davis has to flee that state and flee to South Carolina. So it's a series of worse and worse pieces of bad news that come to Davis, which requires him to flee deeper into the southern interior to escape Union pursuit. But he's convinced as long as there are any soldiers who will still join him, and as long as there's still a Confederate army in Texas, west of the Mississippi, if he can just get there, he can reestablish a Confederacy in the Southwest. So even though this news gets worse and worse, Davis is still holding out hope that he can preserve the Confederacy.
Who was chasing Jefferson Davis? Tell us about the men who were after him and were hunting him.
Yes, well, at first, no one was after Davis. And the interesting thing is, that's because Abraham Lincoln didn't want to catch him. So when Davis flees Richmond on April 2nd, within 36 hours, Abraham Lincoln is in the Confederate White House in Richmond, sitting in Davis's first floor study. And when a Union general approaches Lincoln and says, what are we going to do about these rebels? And he was implying there should be vengeance and manhunts. Lincoln says, if I were you, I'd let them up easy. And Lincoln had already told Sherman and Grant and other top generals, I don't want there to be arrests. I don't want there to be prosecutions. There are going to be no hangings. We can never reunite North and South if we start executing the top Confederate leaders. So essentially, Abraham Lincoln gave Jefferson Davis a 12-day head start between April 2nd and then on April 14th when Lincoln was shot. Of course, everything changed then because the whole country figured that Jefferson Davis had ordered the murder of Lincoln, and the new president, Andrew Johnson, had been a lifelong enemy of Davis, who had hated him for years. So that's when Davis's real trouble began, when Abraham Lincoln is shot on April 14th. He dies April 15th. Now the whole country is in an uproar, and they're all calling for Jefferson Davis's head.
But he wasn't involved in the assassination, right?
No, absolutely not. There's no evidence at all, and I believe that this is the case. Jefferson Davis was not involved in planning the murder of Abraham Lincoln. And in fact, later, when the Union wanted to put him on trial for plotting the murder of Lincoln, they had to give up because there was not a shred of evidence against Davis. And the witnesses who were testifying against him turned out to be liars and frauds and imposters, and the whole case collapsed.
We're talking with James Swanson. His most recent book is Bloody Crimes, The Chase for Jefferson Davis and the Death Pageant for Lincoln's Corpse. James, tell us about Jefferson Davis, the man. He was a bit of a reluctant revolutionary at first, wasn't he?
Yes. We really don't know Jefferson Davis anymore. He's really one of the lost men of American history. We don't know anything about him. We don't read about him. Certainly, nobody reads his memoirs. I've been touring on the book now for a few weeks, and I've been traveling to the South a lot, to some of the major cities. And often at my events, I might have 200 people, 600 people. I say to the audience, if anybody here has read the memoirs of Jefferson Davis, raise your hand. Even in the South, not one person has raised his or her hand. And Davis was actually one of the most interesting and accomplished men in American history prior to the Civil War. He was known as a great American hero and statesman much more than Abraham Lincoln was. He was a congressman, a two-time senator, one of our greatest secretaries of war. He was wounded in battle in the Mexican War, leading troops forward into combat, and he refused to leave the field. He became a spokesman for the whole region. He was known as a charismatic orator, a well-liked man, and he was one of the great politicians of the South. And so prior to the Civil War, it was Jefferson Davis, who most people would have guessed would one day become a president of the United States. And you're right about his reluctance. Davis thought secession was a bad idea. He thought a civil war would be terrible for the South. He thought there should be a compromise. And he didn't want to be president of the Confederacy. It was truly thrust upon him. And when it finally came and he accepted the presidency, he believed he was a conservative, upholding the traditions of Washington and Jefferson. He didn't believe he was a radical revolutionary. He believed Lincoln and the North were the revolutionaries. And Davis believed that the Southern cause was the cause of reason and conservatism. But you're right, he was a reluctant secessionist.
And we're talking with a best-selling and award-winning author, James Swanson. Of course, Jefferson's view really has resonated throughout the 20th century in many parts of the South.
Yes, I would say the Civil War never really came to a complete end because we still discuss the issues that were paramount in the Civil War. We still discuss the proper role of a strong central federal authority versus a federalism of state authority and local control. We still discuss issues of race, of civil rights, of equality. And as long as we discuss these things, the legacy of the Civil War is still with us.
We're talking with best-selling author James Swanson. So they did finally catch Jefferson Davis down in Georgia, right?
Yes. After 6 weeks on the run, thousands of cavalrymen pursuing him and his escort diminishing from several thousand men to his wife, his four small children, and 20 or 30 guards. He was surprised early in the morning in a camp near Irwinville, Georgia. And unlike John Wilkes Booth, Jefferson Davis was not shot and killed on the day he was captured. He was brought back and finally taken to Fortress Monroe in Virginia and imprisoned there for 2 years. At first, solitary confinement, chains, shackles. Verena, his wife, was not allowed to visit him. And the Union tried to figure out, now that we've got him, what are we going to do with him? Many people wanted to kill him. But then Southern people would have risen up in outrage and possibly refought the Civil War or fought a guerrilla war. So the North didn't want that. But then they thought, wait a minute, if we put Jefferson Davis on trial for treason, the Constitution says the trial has to be at the place of the treason, so we're going to have to put him on trial in Richmond. What if he's acquitted? Then that would mean the South was right all along, that secession was not unlawful and the Union had just fought the Civil War for nothing. They didn't want that result either. So after 2 years, it was decided, let's do what Lincoln wanted to do in the first place. Let's just get rid of him. Let him go. And so it was decided that Davis's lawyers would apply for bail. The United States government would not oppose that. And so 2 years after his capture, Jefferson Davis was freed from prison. And then he went on this amazing post-war legacy that has been entirely forgotten. He survived Abraham Lincoln and the end of the war by almost a quarter of a century.
In which he, I guess he did the Nixon Elder Statesman a tour and tried to resurrect his image.
Yes, he did. At first, he didn't know what to do. He was president of an insurance company that went belly up. He traveled the world. He traveled in Canada. He didn't know what to do. He lost his plantation and his wealth. But he found his mission in life, I would argue, in 1870, 5 years after the war, at the death of Robert E. Lee, where he spoke at the memorial service. Lee wanted to write his memoirs, but he never got around to it. And so Davis said, you know, it occurs to me before I'm pulled into the grave, I should write, and I'm quoting now, a history of the struggle of our people. And so he began writing books and articles, corresponding with others, encouraging the formation of historical societies, and his lifelong mission became to become the living symbol of the lost cause. And in that role, especially at this climactic speaking tour through the South at the end of his life, he became a far greater hero 25 years after the Civil War than he had ever been when he was president of the Confederacy.
We're honored to be talking with best-selling and award-winning author James Swanson, Manhunt, one of his books, and also the most recent book, which we're talking about now, is Bloody Crimes, The Chase for Jefferson Davis and the Death Pageant for Lincoln's Corpse. It really is, as you say, the book is about two journeys, Jefferson Davis and Lincoln, after he was killed. Tell us about this now. They put his body on a train and went on this long, meandering journey back to Illinois, right?
Yes. It was the most emotionally intense, publicly staged event in American history up till that point, and I would argue to the present day. It wasn't enough to bury Lincoln in Washington or just have a funeral at the White House and then send him home quickly by train to Springfield, where he came from. No, it was decided he would be sent on a meandering 1,600-mile railroad journey through all the great cities of the North, some of them including Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York City, Cleveland, Columbus, Indianapolis, Chicago, then Springfield. And so 7 million people watched Lincoln's funeral train pass by. And not only that, in each of these major cities, his coffin was unloaded from the train, taken to a public place, and then it was opened. For 20 days, Abraham Lincoln lay unburied. And during this journey, 1 million people, among them 100,000 children, viewed the slowly decaying corpse of Abraham Lincoln as it slowly went home by train.
And including Teddy Roosevelt as a child, right? Is that accurate?
Yes. In fact, a photograph exists of Broadway in New York City. And if you look in an apartment building, a townhouse, I should say, you'll see a little boy looking out the window. And when he was an adult, Teddy Roosevelt saw that photograph and said, "That's me looking out the window of my parents' house at the funeral hearse of Abraham Lincoln being drawn by horses past our front door."
We're talking with James Swanson. The book is Bloody Crimes, and we'll be giving away a free copy here in just a few minutes. So what is the significance, as you look back now and you read about this last journey of Lincoln going home, what do you think the significance is as part of the narrative of this of the war? How did it fit into the narrative of the war?
Well, I think it helped the North heal and bring the war to a close psychologically, emotionally, because I don't think the American people viewed Abraham Lincoln as the only man coming home dead on that funeral train. You know, many thousands of men had been lost on the battlefields, and their bodies had never been recovered, buried in anonymous graves. And in his great poem, Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloom, Whitman wrote that it's not for one man alone that he brings this sprig of lilac. It's for coffins all, to use Whitman's language. And so I'm convinced that the Northern people believe that every father, every son, every brother, every husband lost in that war was somehow symbolically coming home with their father Abraham at the end of that war. And I think that's the source of the tremendous emotional sensation that this train caused. It picked up resonance and emotional power mile by mile. The farther it traveled, the more an important symbol this train became. So I think it was a huge event in bringing to end the end of the war. And, of course, it's also the event that transformed Abraham Lincoln from mortal man, who had had many critics during the war, into an American hero and America's secular saint.
Yeah, before I let you go, I'm very curious, and I don't think most Americans are familiar with this. Talk a little bit about the funeral customs at the time, that it was very common to put bodies on display like this.
Yeah, so it was certainly the Victorian age, and there was an obsession with death and funeral display. And so part of this was quite morbid. You know, part of it was certainly an honest, sincere tribute to Lincoln. But part of it was morbid, which was the mood of the time in the Victorian customs of mourning. Bodies displayed for days, flowers piled high. Everywhere Lincoln's body went, there were thousands of flowers piled around the coffin. That just wasn't for physical beauty. That was so the overpowering, sweet, almost sickeningly sweet scent of the flowers would overcome any odor coming from the decaying corpse, because they couldn't quite fully preserve Lincoln. Embalming was primitive then. So his corpse began to turn darker and darker along the way until it became quite disturbing to a number of the viewers, including the children.
Amazing. James Swanson, his new book is Bloody Crimes, award-winning and best-selling author. It's the chase for Jefferson Davis and the death pageant for Lincoln's corpse. James, it's a terrific book, and I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us.
Oh, thanks, Coy. It's a pleasure to be on.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.